Okay, so welcome everybody. Today our topic is practical guidelines for good living. But before I get into the topic, I just want us to sit quietly for a few moments together. I know you just got done doing a meditation, but it's very helpful to just sit quietly, all of us together, and cultivate our motivation before we have a Dharma talk. So let's just come back to our breath, breathing normally and naturally, keeping our mind here in the present moment with what's happening now, which is that we're breathing. And not letting the mind run into the past or the future or give a commentary on our breath or anything like that. Just focus on the breath and let the mind become clear and calm. Take a moment to cultivate our motivation and to think very clearly about our purpose for being together this morning. And to remember our fortune at meeting a spiritual path. And of having the opportunity to cultivate love and compassion and wisdom. And so let's cultivate that love, compassion, wisdom, and other virtuous qualities, not simply for our own benefit, but in order to contribute to the benefit of the entire society. And even beyond that, to the benefit of each and every living being. And this is done by progressing along the path to full awakening, by gaining spiritual realizations which will enable us to be of great benefit in an effective way for all others. And so let's make that our reason for being together.
Okay.
So the series that we've been having on Sharing the Dharma Day, this particular series is being based on this book called Taming the Mind. And so we've been going through the chapters of the book, the idea being that people would read the chapters before they come and then come here and then we talk about them. However, I don't think that's what's been happening so much for having a plan. But that technically is the plan. And so we're now on the chapter that's talking about guidelines for good living, which is the topic of taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, deciding what our spiritual path is, and then making that connection with the three jewels, and then how to keep that connection in a very strong and pure way. So that's the topic that we have outlined for today. I should tell you about what's coming up in the book, though, in the hopes that people really will read the... We're on the first section of the book. Okay, so what we talked about before was the mind being the creator of our experiences. And then we talked about developing concern for our future lives, developing the wish to be free from cyclic existence and practicing the Eightfold Noble Path to do that. And then also the bodhicitta. And then a few more topics that she sprinkled in here. And what we'll be getting into, because we'll have one more Sharing the Dharma Day before we have our winter retreat, then when we come back from our winter retreat, we'll be getting into section two, which has to do with our relationships with others. And this section is extracted from the Sikkhalabhata Sutra, where the Buddha talked about, you know, gave guidelines on different kinds of relationships. So, the relationship between a spiritual mentor and a student, between a parent and a child, between friends, between colleagues and clients, marital relationships. And then we get into the third section, which is called Taming Bad Habits and Cultivating Good Ones. So the first one under there is called Complaining, a Favorite Pastime. I was talking about myself there. Okay. And then speaking of the faults of others, ruminating, being responsible for our lives, and cultivating beneficial habits. And then from there we get into the spread of the Buddhist teachings, where we'll talk about the life of the Buddha, a little bit about the history and the different Buddhist traditions. And then to, the fifth section is about Buddhism today, where we talk about what is Buddhism, what is superstition, and also about interfaith dialogue. Okay, so that's a little preview of what's to come after the winter retreat. But today we're talking about refuge and then the practical guidelines for good living, which are how to keep our refuge in a very pure way. So what refuge means is making a choice about our spiritual path and who we're going to take spiritual direction from. Okay? And I think this is an important thing. We don't have to push ourselves to decide what spiritual path we're following. Some people may take more time and other people less to find what really suits them. But at some point it's good to make a choice and then go deeply within that point, within that path. Because if we're always skipping around from one thing to another, then we never have the opportunity to go deeply. And also our views tend to be quite confused. You know, if one day we're going to a religion where they talk about a creator God, and then the next day you're going to a religion where they say, you know, things are produced by karma, and then, you know, these kinds of things. And you may not be certain what you believe. You know, is there a creator God or isn't there? You know, what is liberation seen to be? You know, what are the causes of our pain and confusion in our lives? And so different faiths may have different assertions regarding these things. And so it's helpful at some point to kind of figure out what we ourselves believe in, and then stick with that view and that path so that we can get to the conclusion of a path. Okay? So, taking refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha means that somebody's done research on the Buddhist path. They have some knowledge of the Four Noble Truths. In other words, the Buddhist view of the universe. You know, what our problem is, what causes our problem, is there a solution to it, and then the path to that solution. Okay, and so it's based on having learned that and thought about that. Okay, so when we enter into Buddhism, we don't start out with first faith in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Because if you have no idea of the Buddhist worldview and how the path is set up, then what is the faith based on? It's not based on anything except, well, Buddha looks nice, you know? Buddha looks peaceful, or I like the chanting, or something like that. But that kind of faith, because it isn't based on understanding, is not going to endure very long, and it's not going to be very stable, because the moment somebody else comes and says something different, then we'll go, oh yeah, that sounds pretty good, and we'll go for that. And then we hop around a lot and never get the depth in the practice. Okay? So that's why faith from a Buddhist viewpoint is based on understanding, and understanding has to come from learning. So it's not blind faith. And I know this is something that personally was very important to me when I met the Dharma. Because my teachers said, you don't have to believe anything we say. And I said, oh, good. And that opened the door for me to be able to listen to them. And they said, you're intelligent people. You know, you hear and you think on your own, and you test it out and see if it makes sense to you. And if it does, you practice it. And if the practice helps, then you know that it works. Yeah. But if it doesn't make any sense to you, and it doesn't work when you practice it, then who needs it? Yeah. We aren't trying to adopt a religion so that we can belong to a football team. Yeah. And I say that because nowadays, sometimes religion is like rooting for a football team. Now, I am this religion. Rah, rah, mine is best. Rah, rah, kill the others. You know, that's not religion, excuse me. Okay? So religion, I think this goes for all the world's religions. For people who sincerely practice them, religion is about internal transformation. We practice it together in a group because it helps us. But religion is not for the purpose of creating an identity that sets us apart from other people. Yeah. Because why go to a holy being to learn to set ourselves apart and develop an ego identity when we can do that perfectly well by ourselves? Mm-hmm. Doesn't make any sense, does it? Okay. So all the paths are really based on, you know, internal transformation, which means going up beyond the football team mentality. and really looking inside at what's going on inside and how we're thinking, you know, and how we're acting and how we're speaking. Okay, so when we take refuge in the Buddha Dharma and Sangha, we're looking at the world and seeing that our lives are what is called cyclic existence, okay? An unsatisfactory state in which, through the force of ignorance and afflictions and our own actions, we are perpetually taking one uncontrolled rebirth after the next. And since ignorance is the root of our other mental afflictions, such as anger and greed and jealousy and all the actions that come out of them that produce the misery, since ignorance is the chief root of all that, then we are seeking a path that destroys the ignorance and thus the afflictions and thus the karma and thus the misery. Okay? And that path is a path of wisdom, and it produces, when we follow it completely, a state of liberation. Okay? When we want liberation not only for ourselves, but for all other beings, then we seek full enlightenment in which all of our defilements have been eliminated so that we can be of the greatest benefit to others. Okay, so that's the worldview that we're going into it with. So then when we look at the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, the real refuge is the Dharma. Because the real Dharma, although we say practice the Dharma, okay, sometimes Dharma meaning teachings, when we really say practice the Dharma, the real Dharma is the consciousness that eliminates ignorance. Yeah. The real Dharma are the consciousnesses that know what exists and what doesn't exist. The wisdom consciousnesses. And the real Dharma is the cessations of misery and unsatisfaction that arise due to these wisdom consciousnesses. So that Dharma is the real refuge, because when we actualize that Dharma in our own mind stream, then we ourselves are free from samsara, from cyclic existence. Okay? Then the Sangha are those beings who have some realization, some direct realization of the nature of reality, and who have started to eliminate different degrees of this ignorance. And they're reliable because they have the Dharma in their mind. They've seen the way things exist. And then the Buddha is the one who has fully eliminated all obscurations and taught the path from his own experience. Okay? So that's how we see the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Even though we say Buddha first, then Dharma, and then Sangha, actually, the Dharma is the real refuge. When we practice it, we first become a Sangha, and then, by perfecting our realizations, we go on to become a Buddha. Okay? That's the way, in terms of practice, it's described. First the Dharma, then the Sangha, then the Buddha. When we say Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, that order, then we're seeing the Buddha as the teacher, the one who explained the Dharma, the path, and the cessation from his own experience, and the Sangha as those who have practiced and actualized it. Or in another metaphor that's given, the Buddha is like a doctor who diagnoses our illness, which is ignorance and afflictions and karma. The medicine is the Dharma, wisdom, compassion, and so forth. And the Sangha are like nurses who help us take the medicine. Because we have to take the medicine. Just having this prescription doesn't make us well. And just buying the medicine and leaving it by our nightstand doesn't make us well. Okay? So we have to actually take the medicine. And we have to take it correctly. You know, so many blue pills in the morning and green ones and, you know, midday and so on. Okay? So we really need to understand what the Dharma is and how to practice it properly. Okay? When we reach a point in our spiritual exploration where we're sure that this is the path that we want to practice, then we can request to do the refuge ceremony from a spiritual mentor. And this is a very brief refuge ceremony. And then we officially become Buddhists. But in actual fact, whenever we do a meditation session, we begin by taking refuge and cultivating the aspiration for full enlightenment. So in fact, we are taking refuge all the time, whether we've done it formally or informally. Once having decided that the Buddhist path is the one that we want to follow, then having these guidelines for good living really help us to keep our refuge in a very good way and to deepen our understanding of the path. Okay? So it's very important, you know, once we've decided on the path, to continually deepen our understanding. Otherwise, you know, the path has no opportunity to benefit us, does it? You know, if we practice a little here and then forget about it for 6 months and go to teachings, you know, every once in a while, then in between, you know, we're kind of losing our awareness of our spiritual path, and that doesn't help us, okay? Whereas as much as we can integrate the Dharma in our daily life and have continuous contact with it, then that much it deepens in us. And that's the purpose for having an abbey or a monastery, is because we structure our whole life here around the Dharma, and everything you're doing, you know, you're bumping into the Dharma in one way or another. Those are not the nice kind of collisions to have. Yeah, because you'll notice, you know, when we go in for our meal, we do some recitations beforehand to steer our mind in a good direction. After the meal, we do some more recitations to again steer our mind. We have morning and evening meditation. Before we start offering service, we recite verses. When the community has a meeting in the morning, there's a verse that we recite, you know, setting our intention. So, and also when you go in the house, you'll see all the little verses tacked up around the wall. You know, so these are all things to continually remind us of the practice in the hopes that we will put it into practice. Yeah. Just having the continued reminders isn't sufficient. You got to put it into practice. Okay? And so we do that with each other. Yeah. Someone gave an introduction about the abbey. Was it last week when I was in Coeur d'Alene? And she was talking in glowing terms about the abbey and everybody's so peaceful and calm and developed in love and compassion. And she's been up here many times. Wait, gee, that sounds good, but you know, we're also real live human beings and we clunk against each other and we don't always agree and we have bad moods like everybody else, you know. But the idea is we're trying to do something about them besides blame other people, you know. So this kind of heavenly vision of the Abbey, yeah, we're just human beings like everybody else, trying hard, yeah, with the same defilements. Okay, so the chapter here, Practical Guidelines for Good Living, the essentials are also found in the blue prayer book for those of you who have one in front of you. On page 94. Yes, page 94. Guidelines for your practice of refuge. So these guidelines are explained more in depth here in the book. Okay. And then recently on Bodhisattva Breakfast Corner, I also gave an explanation that you can listen to on YouTube. Oh, speaking of YouTube, I want to mention there's another thing on YouTube that you can watch, besides all the kung fu things. It's called the Charter for Compassion. And it's something that was begun by Karen Armstrong, who is a biblical scholar. I read her book many years ago, Through the Narrow Gate, where she describes becoming an Episcopal nun. I think it was Episcopal, maybe Catholic, and pre-Vatican II, and what she went through, and she eventually left. But she's a very deeply spiritual person, and so under her influence, there's this thing called the Charter of Compassion that now has been endorsed by many great spiritual leaders and other people who aren't spiritual leaders. So really, I should have printed it out and brought it and read it to you, but it's basically talking about the need to bring compassion into our lives and use compassion as the motivation for fairness in society, for reducing and eliminating prejudice and bias in the workplace, in the home, wherever. Compassion as a reason for having a healthy economy that's not based on greed and self-centeredness. Compassion as a reason for business ethics. Yeah, and so I think this is quite an important thing in our society, to bring compassion into every aspect of it. Okay, so you can look that up also on YouTube, Charter for Compassion. I think we'll send it around in our e-news so people can go and read it and sign in. Yeah. Okay, so in terms of the practice, the guidelines for good living. Yeah. In analogy to taking refuge in the Buddha, commit yourself wholeheartedly to a qualified spiritual master. So this is kind of what I was saying before. You know, we have to settle on something, settle on a path, settle on a teacher, and build a long-term relationship so that we can really deepen our understanding. In the Buddhist tradition, it's fine to have more than one teacher. Yeah? Sometimes you find Buddhist traditions where teachers say, you can't go to anybody else, only me. I'm a little bit worried about that. Okay? I mean, at least the teacher's disciples and the teacher's students and the teacher's teacher, you know, the teacher should be encouraging, yeah? And, you know, so, but this process of deciding on a teacher and really following a tradition is something that is beneficial for us. But it's essential to check out the qualities of a teacher first and make sure it's somebody that is qualified and somebody that you feel a connection with. And then to learn how to have a healthy relationship with that teacher. Because nowadays in the West, people sometimes really misunderstand this and get into all kinds of weird trips because they haven't understood it properly. So that's a topic for a whole other discourse. Actually, that comes up in the next section in Taming the Mind. Okay, then an analogy to taking refuge in the Dharma, listen to and study the teachings as well as put them into practice in your own life. So this is the heart of the whole thing, you know, learning and practicing. And that's our responsibility. we have to do it. It's not something we can hire somebody else to do for us. You know? Like, you can hire somebody to clean your house or to, you know, drive your car or to run errands for you. But things like eating and sleeping, you have to do yourself. And it's the same with practicing the Dharma. We have to do that ourselves. We can't hire anybody else to do it, because it's our own mind that has to be transformed. And then an analogy to taking refuge in the Sangha, we respect the monastic community as our spiritual companions and follow their good examples. Okay? So what's interesting here is it's a monastic community, not just an individual, unless it's an individual who has direct realization of reality. Then the Sangha can mean just one individual. But otherwise, it's a community. Yeah? And I think that that's important, because we need the support of a community. We need the example of many people who are practicing together and dealing with their issues. And that gives us inspiration, and it also gives us guidance. It also says here to follow their good example. Yeah? And so I always tell people, like I just told you about this fairy tale image of the abbey, you know, we're human beings. Sometimes we make mistakes. Okay? So we shouldn't have this fairy tale view that, you know, everything any monastic does is automatically, you know, pure and sacred and holy and an example for our behavior. Rather, what we do, and this goes for teachers too, is we compare somebody's behavior with the teachings that the Buddha gave. And if their behavior is in accord with that, then we take their behavior as a good example. If their behavior is not in accord with that, we don't take their bad behavior as an example. Okay? This is something quite important, you know? And so knowing that people don't always understand this, for us in robes, it's important to really practice and act well. But for other people, you know, kind of cut us some slack, please. You know? And I say this because really sometimes people, they get into these weird kind of things. And, you know, somebody might be acting poorly, and they'll say, oh, but if that person's doing it, well, I can too. Well, no. Okay? So we always have to bring our wisdom to all the different aspects of the Dharma. Yeah? Somebody told me some years ago, she was going to a teacher that passed out on the sidewalk because he was drunk. And she said, you know, she said to me, oh, I really appreciate, you know, how you keep good ethical discipline, but I really like this teacher's teachings. You know, and to him the fact that he just passed out on the sidewalk because he was drunk, kind of it was like, well, that doesn't matter to me. You know, in spite of one of the five precepts being not to drink. So, you know, for that person, that was the decision she made. I can't comment on that teacher's level of realization. But I just know for me personally, that's not a good example. And, you know, even if the teacher gave glorious verbal teachings, I wouldn't be able to fully have faith and confidence in what was going on because of that example. So you don't just say, well, because a teacher did it, it must be okay. Okay? You know, we each have different standards. This particular person, like that person's teachings, that's fine, you know. Do what you want. But we all have our own standards, and so we have to, you know, live by them. Okay, then avoid this next one. It's hard. Avoid being rough and arrogant, running after any desirable object you see. What do you think of that one? Mm-hmm. That one's not so easy. It has a second part. And avoid criticizing anything that meets with your disapproval.
Whoa.
Okay. So avoid being rough and arrogant, running after any desirable object we see. So this is really a practical guideline for good living. Because if we watch ourselves, you know, we see a desirable object, what does our mind do? I want it. I have to have it. Okay. And of course we express that in a very gracious, dignified way. You know, because our parents taught us not to, you know, be so blatantly greedy. But, you know, we still want prestige and high finance and good reputation and spirit, you know, possessions and whatever it is. You know, when we go in for lunch, we look at what there is and, oh, how can I get it? Yeah? Or we go into a room to sit down. Oh, where's the seat that I want to sit in? Where's the best seat? Yeah? And so all the time, you know, looking out for what we find desirable and what running after it. Now, you might say, well, what's the matter with that? If it makes me happy, what's the matter with it? Okay? Being happy is, or unhappy is not the issue. Of course, we all want to be happy. But it's what we do to get the happiness that becomes the issue. Okay? Because often, when we have very strong attachment or desire or greed for something, then we do actions that are harmful in order to get what we want. Okay? We might lie, we might cut in front of others, we might manipulate, we might steal, okay? Or we might do the white collar names for these. Embezzlement instead of steal. You know, you don't steal, you embezzle, right? And you don't kill, you defend yourself. Yeah. So, you know, we kind of have sophisticated language sometimes for our non-virtuous actions. But, you know, we will often engage in things that cause harm to others and harm ourselves because they're motivated by ignorance, anger, and confusion. But harmful, you know, negative, could put seeds in our mind of these harmful actions. Okay? So it's the actions that we do with our body, speech, and mind to get what we want. Those become the problem. Okay? Not the happiness. So Buddhism isn't saying don't be happy. It's saying be happy. But if you create unwholesome actions in an attempt to be happy, it's shooting yourself in the foot, because in the long term those actions are going to bring painful results to yourself, and immediately they could be very well harming somebody else. Okay? So when we're running after any desirable object we want, we do become rough and arrogant, don't we? Yeah. Kind of the arrogance, because it's what I want and I deserve it. And I am entitled to have everything I want. Why? Because I'm me. Yeah. Not very good logic, but that's what our mind thinks. Okay? So somehow, you know, being on the lookout for that and modifying that behavior. And then the second part of it, to avoid criticizing anything that meets with our disapproval. Okay, that's relating to these upcoming chapters about complaining and bad-mouthing other people. No? Because when we disapprove of something, then that's what we do. Yeah? And it's interesting to look at what we disapprove of and why we disapprove of it. Because often the reason why we disapprove of something is because it interferes with our own self-centered happiness. Not because it's something ethically wrong or harmful to others, but because it interferes with our getting the desirable objects that we feel entitled to, even at others' expense. Okay? So to watch that mind that loves to complain and criticize. Yeah. Anybody here do that? Oh, it's a little embarrassing, isn't it? Yeah. We, you know, can really get it into our complaining and our whining and our, you know, and we get into our criticizing and blaming. You know, I'm unhappy and I have no responsibility for my own unhappiness. It's all your fault. That way of thinking just puts us into a prison, doesn't it? Because if our unhappiness is someone else's fault, then until we change that other person, we can't be happy. We're giving away our power. How are we going to change somebody else and make them do what we want? Pretty difficult. We keep trying. But it doesn't work so well. Okay? So to really look at the mind that criticizes and complains. And also, you know, to look and see, how do I feel when I indulge in criticism and complaining? Yeah. Regardless of the effect that it has on others, which is often quite a negative effect, how do I feel after I've had a nice session with a friend where I've complained my heart out for the last half an hour? Mm-hmm. Or together where we've berated somebody else. You know, after I've done that, what's my own internal feeling? Do I feel good? Yeah? Not really. At first we might feel, oh, well, I got it all out. You know, I dumped my stuff out. Yeah. I vented, that's the word. I vented it, so it's gone. But how do we feel inside? I don't know about you, but I always feel kind of yucky. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, how have I influenced the other person? I've fed all this negativity into the other person. And what are they going to do with it? Has it made them happy? Okay. So I think, you know, rather than vent and dump our stuff on other people, to try and work out things in our own meditation practice as much as we can. That does not mean that we don't go and talk to somebody when there's a misunderstanding or disagreement. Because I've gone to the other extreme. I remember once I was so angry at somebody and I thought, okay, I'm just going to work this out on my cushion. And I sat there for days and weeks on my cushion trying to work it out. And I made some progress, but still my mind was upset. And one day I decided to go to the person and talk with her about it. And as it wound up, I had completely misunderstood what she said. And if I had asked her at the very beginning what she meant, I wouldn't have spent days and weeks trying to deal with my anger, because I wouldn't have been angry in the first place. Because I would have realized immediately that I didn't understand correctly what she meant. Okay? So I think it is very helpful to go to somebody when there's a disagreement and talk with that person. Yeah. But very often what we do is we talk with everybody else but that person. Yeah. So in the office you have a disagreement with somebody, do you go to the person in the office you have the disagreement with? No, you go to everybody else, all your other colleagues, everybody else in the office, and you complain about that person, trying to get them on your side and make them the black sheep. Does that resolve the conflict? No, it just divides the office into factions and polarizes people. Okay, so it's not a very good technique. We use it a lot, but it doesn't work. Whereas if we really try ourselves to to tame our own criticism and to talk with the person when we don't understand where they're coming from. Then that works much better. And when we go to another person and, you know, we say, you know, kind of what's going on in your mind, or you did this behavior and I'm not sure kind of what you're looking for, or what you meant, or whatever, please explain to me. Then we have to really listen from our heart when they talk. We don't interrupt after they've said one sentence, you know. After they say, well, you did da 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 da, then we say, oh, no, I didn't, you know. And then, you know, this is right after we ask them to please explain how they feel to us and what they're thinking. And instantaneously we interrupt them and tell them, you know, that what they're saying isn't true. Well, that's not going to work. Okay? So we have to really learn to listen in those circumstances. And what I say to myself in those circumstances is, you know, when I approach somebody and say, you know, please, I didn't understand this, please explain to me. Then whatever they say, I just say to myself, you can respond later. You don't have to respond right now. Yeah, just listen. Instead of having this fire burning inside that I have to instantaneously tell them that they're wrong. You know, let's hear them out, see how they're thinking. Yeah, even repeat it back to them so that they know that I've understood it. So, trying to do that. Okay, then, as much as possible, avoid the 10 non-virtuous actions and take and keep precepts. So, 10 non-virtuous actions, yeah, killing, stealing, unwise and unkind sexual behavior, lying, create disharmony with our speech, harsh words and idle talk, and then coveting, maliciousness and wrong views. And as much as possible, try and keep the precepts, like the five-day precepts or the one-day precepts. Then have a compassionate and sympathetic heart towards all other sentient beings. That's what we want, isn't it? We can't tell ourselves to have one. We have to do the meditations that create that feeling in our heart. So this instruction to have a compassionate and sympathetic heart towards everybody isn't something like, okay, I'm going to be compassionate now. You know, it's like we've got to do the meditations on equanimity, on seeing the kindness of others, and so on, so that we can really generate this feeling. And then on special Buddhist holidays, to make offerings to the Buddha Dharma and Sangha. It's another practice. Then there's many more, but I will leave it to you to read the chapter, go over them, because I want to leave some time for Q&A right now. So it's your turn to ask questions and make comments.
Yeah. I was going to ask a question. Just, you mentioned that the person who you take refuge from is like becomes a spiritual mentor. Now, what if you already have a teacher that you have the main connection to, and you haven't been able to take refuge with that person? Then you have another teacher who you've been studying with, and you feel a connection to them, and you take refuge, and they're in the same lineage, and you know, very connected. But now, how is that relationship affected with your main teacher and the community?
Oh, okay. So you're asking if you have a main teacher and you haven't had the opportunity to take refuge, but somebody else in the same lineage is there, and you take refuge with that person, how does that affect the relationship with your main teacher? It doesn't. It's good you took refuge. You can have more than one teacher. Yeah, you're the one who chooses who your main teacher is. So it doesn't adversely affect that relationship.
Mm-hmm. I just have a question. Like you were saying earlier, you may not know Buddhism, but that there's an ideology that is comfortable and familiar to you. So in that case, in order to absorb oneself and kind of study, you still have a teacher, even though you're not necessarily committing to Buddhism.
Okay. So when you're saying when you want to really learn the Dharma, but you're not sure if you want to commit to it, you know, can you still have a teacher? Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
Okay, yeah. So just wherever you live, you find, you ask someone?
Well, you just go and you attend classes, or you listen in on the internet or whatever. And it's always good to do research about a teacher and find out, you know, what they've studied in their practice and so on. Okay? Yeah. In fact, His Holiness recommends that people at the very beginning that, you know, they go and they listen to teachings by various teachers, and they don't have to take that teacher as their teacher just because they've gone at the beginning to listen to teachings from them. Okay, it's later on when you really decide that now you want to be part of this path. It's at that moment that you form a student-teacher relationship. Okay? Other questions?
Yeah? No, I when you talked early, at the very beginning of the talk, you talked about not taking refuge on blind faith.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I think my own experience, and in talking with lots of people, it's not that initially there's a feeling of blind faith, but there is suddenly a feeling of resonance that you don't know a whole lot,
mm-hmm.
but suddenly you have this, oh, this is really making a lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as I've been talking to people lately about taking refuge, you know, where in that continuum, if you know you feel very strongly about it, it connects at much deeper place than some other place, but you don't have a whole lot of information, just enough to know that this sounds like the right direction.
Okay, so the question is, you haven't studied a lot, you haven't investigated the Dharma a lot, you don't know a lot, but you've learned something, and what you've learned has really resonated inside your heart, and you know that that's true, and you want to follow that. Is that good enough to take refuge? I would say yes. Okay? Because there, you're depending upon the truth that you've seen in the teachings that you've been able to validate through your own experience. Okay? Because I know, to give my own personal example, when I met the Dharma, I took refuge after the first three-week course I attended. And why I did was because the teachers there were really showed how ignorance, clinging, attachment, and anger were the source of suffering, and how being self-centered caused problems. And through even the very little bit of meditation and reflection I had done in those 3 weeks, I saw that was definitely true in my own life. Yeah. So I didn't understand, the 70 topics of the Abhisamaya Alankara. You know, I didn't even know what it was. I still can't list all 70 for you. But, you know, I knew something that related to my life that was definitely true, and that there was no way my ego could wiggle around that one. Okay, so I think if you have that strong feeling of something in the teachings that really resonates, then it's fine to take refuge. Yeah. What I'm talking about is more people who come in and just kind of with this movie star mind, oh, Buddhism, everybody's holy, and, you know, like that. Because that isn't going to last forever, and because it's not based on the Dharma. It's not based on any Dharma understanding. It's just based on being impressed because there's lots of brocade and bells and drums and hats and dances and all these external things. Yeah. But if somebody has some heart connection because of a teaching that's really made sense to them, that's a different ballgame. Okay? Anything else? Okay, then let's sit quietly for a minute. And just absorb what we've heard, and then we will chant the dedication prayer. That is on page 39. Yes, yes it is. Let's just take a couple of minutes and really reflect on what we heard. Mm-hmm. just dedicate.
Due to the spread of their wisdom, obtain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forever.